Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather round your radio. It's time for This Life.
Hey,
with Dr. Drew and Bob.
Hey, before we introduce our guest, reminder.
Shout out, remind you?
Hang on now, guys. Gentlemen, hold
the
on.
Headache, but go ahead.
shout out to our great sponsor at Bergamet.com. Also, do please go to Dr.com. Click on the Bergamet banner for details. And bookmark that Amazon banner at Dr.com for your holiday shopping and all your needs. Doesn't cost you a thing, but it helps us keep this thing afloat. Also, please tell a friend and subscribe to This Life podcast wherever it is available. Podbean, TuneIn.com. podcastchart.com. We are a top podcast in self-help and health. We are everywhere and at your service, so please support us. We love having you guys. Tell a friend. And also go to Dr.com and look at the growing family of podcasts that are there. We got the Weekly Infusion Now podcast up with me and Dr. Bruce Heischober. You can get the Me and Mike podcast. You get the Dr. Drew podcast, Dr. and Adam podcast. The old band is back together. All shows free, iTunes and Dr.com. So now let's welcome my friend and colleague, Bert DeBrow.
There he is.
Applause. Legendary. Yes.
I just read his bio, and he apparently went to find Howdy Doody at a liquor store in New Rochelle, New York.
He what?
Tell the story, Bert.
I did.
But it's you're a little backwards, so let me explain.
Wait, first, I have to explain why you're here. Bert was my executive producer on the show
we did at HLN. The show.
He's a showrunner. It's more than that when you're at CNN, HLN. Which made the show.
I was just there.
Which is now AT&T.
Right. We haven't even talked about that.
Which is crazy.
Right, I know.
But he ran the organization and the show and the employees.
Well, I was there. I know who was in charge.
Well, you never went upstairs to see the offices and how things run. And it's a news organization. We had to have a daily show out about the daily news. And Bert ran everything. But now you can tell his history and his Howdy Doody.
But then can we go back and talk about that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
You were inspired by Howdy Doody.
When I was growing up, I was a child of the 50s. And I do believe that I came out of the womb loving television, and I would wake up early in the morning. I still do, as crazy as it sounds. And I would get up at like 5:30 in the morning on the weekends and watch. Then there was a farm report on the New York WNBC, and it's all they had. But I would watch and watch and watch, and eventually the Howdy Doody show came on, which was on NBC, then at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning. And I began to watch this thing. And for some reason, I was fascinated. When I was growing up, everything seemed to be puppets. So I loved to watch puppets and live television and all that. So these all became idols of mine later, which we can talk about. But anyway, so I'm watching Howdy Doody.
Let me just pay it forward on that. So now he has a dummy and puppet collection, including Howdy Doody himself.
You have Howdy Doody himself?
Yes.
See, I didn't know.
And all of Paul Winchell's, Jerry Mahoney's, all this stuff. Paul Winchell was his best friend. It all went there.
You just knew me from talking drugs. I know a lot more. But listen, so I will finish this.
I just wanted to get to the liquor store.
That's where I'm going. I'm getting to. That's right. Very good. Okay. So I'm on the playground at recess one day, and a kid.
How old are you?
What?
How old are you?
10 years old. And a kid says, "Hey, remember the Howdy Doody show is huge at this point.
Biggest,
right? And some kid on the playground says, did you hear that Buffalo Bob has the liquor store? Now, that made no sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah.
Well, now.
If you're you, yes. But if you're me, no.
Again, by the way, Bert toured the country with Buffalo Bob later.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
So anyway, this kept coming up that Buffalo Bob had a liquor store. And finally, because I was so interested, I said, well, where's his liquor store? And they said, well, it's on the north end of New Rochelle. I lived on the south end. I went to school on the south end. It was in the north end. So I did a little research at 10 and found out that if I take a bus, which was the M bus.
No internet.
The M bus, I could get from the south end to the north end, get to that liquor store, and I could meet Buffalo Bob.
Oh my God.
Did you expect to see him like behind the counter handing out Jack Daniel's?
I didn't know what to expect. Part of me didn't believe this.
Yeah.
So I got on the bus after school about 3:30, did not tell my parents because,
of course not.
I'm going to Buffalo Bob's liquor store. They would have locked me up.
By the way, can I just say, knowing Bert as long as I have now, that quality of I don't believe this. I got to go see it for myself. That's in his head.
Right. Nothing has changed.
Right?
Drew's right. So I get on this M bus. And I remember like it was yesterday, and I'm on it, and then eventually it gets to this place called Waikikil in New Rochelle, which is a shopping center. I get off, and damn it, right in front of me is a sign that says Liquors. I walk into the store, and I said to a guy, and remember, I'm the small little kid, is Buffalo Bob here?
Oh.
And this man who had a checked shirt on, black horn-rim glasses, looks at me and says, I'm Buffalo Bob.
No way.
Now, hold on.
Was he?
Well, hold it. Now, remember, on television, he's wearing like a buckskin suit.
Yeah, yeah, and he's all happy.
Right. And here is a check shirt and black glasses. And he's on Buffalo Bob. And he's, what's your name? And I said, my name is Bert Dubrow. And he goes from underneath the counter, and he takes out a, not 8x10, a little smaller, but it was a postcard, color picture of himself and Howdy. And he's, what's your name? And he signs it to me.└
And to be fair, you know, who knew that television could make a career or a living?
Right.
Right? He sold liquor.
So anyway, as he's talking to me, though,
you recognize it.
The voice is becoming more recognizable. And so he does this. I take the picture. I get back on the M bus, go back home, and I get in trouble. Where were you? You know, where were you? You didn't call, blah, blah. I said, well, I was at Buffalo Bob's liquor store.
No cell phones.
And they think I'm crazy. Well, I continue to do this to the point, by the way, the liquor store had a big glass window that when they would see me coming, I would see Bob run in the back. And then they would say to me, he's not here. Bob's not here. Buffalo Bob is not here. So,
and would you be asking him questions about
Howdy? Oh, everything
blah, blah, blah.
You could imagine. Yeah. And then finally,
at first, he was probably entertained by it and liked answering the questions.
And then annoyed this guy. And then finally, one day, my dad says he needed liquor. He was going to go buy some scotch. Oh. And he used to buy it. And I still remember the name of the store. It was called Gene Greco's Liquor Store. And I said, well, don't go there. Let's go to Buffalo Bob's Liquor Store. And my mother looked at him. And I remember the look like, let's get this over with. You know, let's appease him. And so we got in the car.
Help,
and
you're still 10 now.
10 years old. Took him on the route on that M bus.
You showed
same
him where
route.
To go.
And he was surprised because there's a liquor store. And we walk in and thank the good Lord.
He was there.
Bob was there, and as I walk in with my
father.
Did they
think you were lying or making it up?
I don't know, probably. Yeah. And I walk in, and Bob yells, sees me, and goes, there's my buddy Bert. And my father turned a color that I'd never seen before in my life. And the two of them talk, and they went to a corner and talked, and then they brought me over. And I found out later what they said.
What they
Bob,
say?
Well, Bob was telling my father, if he's really interested in this, you're not going to stop him. So don't even try to stop him. So he handed...
There you go, some wise words.
Yeah. Yes, he handed me 12 tickets to the show. Now, here's how popular the show was at this point. If you had if you were pregnant, you would write for tickets at one point when you were pregnant, so by the time your child came of age, you'd have tickets to the show.
By the time the kid's five.
Yeah, right. He gave me 12 tickets. So I brought friends, blah, blah, blah. And that began a relationship. Now, here's the fun part of this. There was a magazine called TV Junior that was a takeoff on TV Guide came out, and for kids. And I went and I was buying that. I was buying everything you could buy. And it had an article in it about the guy who played Clarabelle on the show, whose name was Lou Anderson. And the article said that he lived, which was the biggest mistake they could have made.
Oh, my God.
In White Plains,
New
York.
White Plains, New York.
Which is also Westchester County. So I got to the phone book. There's a word you don't hear a lot anymore. And I found his number. I called him, started to bug him on the phone. He sent me a picture. And one day, I find out later, they're at rehearsal. And they're talking. Bob's talking about this pain in the ass kid who keeps coming to the liquor store. And Lou's listening to this and says, wait a minute.
The kid's calling
this kid wouldn't be Bert, would it? And it turned out. So anyway, we became very, very good friends. I stayed friendly with all of them all those years. As Drew mentioned, this is about 1961 or something at this point. Now I went away to school years later, and I'm in school in Boston, and I had stayed sort of in touch with Bob.
A school that's defunct, that he would do TV shows, directing TV shows.
It was all communication.
Where one of your premier hosts or talents was
Andy Kaufman was my best friend. And he was
Andy
Kaufman. He was at the school too.
But
that's a whole other story, which I don't mind telling you about in a minute. Because Howdy connected Andy and I. But anyway, I'm reading in the newspaper one day in 71, that at Buffalo Bob's going to be at the University of Pennsylvania. This is 12 years after the show went off the air, They're doing a nostalgia night, and Buffalo Bob's going to be there. They invited him. And I thought, what the hell? So I waited. I found out about it. I read about it. Turned out it was huge, a huge hit. And I immediately called Bob's brother, because now I know the whole family. By
You're part of the family.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm part of the family. I called. I said, listen, I got to be part of this. How can this possibly be? But so you got to call Bob. Anyway, Bob called me. It turned out that he was coming to Boston to do one of his big college shows at a place called New England Life Hall that I remember this. And we had dinner ahead of time. And by the way, having dinner with him was having dinner with the guy with the black glasses and the check shirt. No. And then he said, look, watch the show and then we'll meet afterwards. I said, all right. And I walk into this theater, auditorium, had to be 2,000 seats, packed. Now, this is early 70s now. So everybody in the audience is smashed. They're all smoking weed. They've not seen Buffalo Bob in 12 years, their first father image. Everybody's going crazy that they're going to see him. It opens up with a kinescope, an old film of the Howdy Show in black and white. So now you're seeing all the characters you hadn't seen since you were a kid. He comes out in this, I'm really not kidding you. As I tell you the story now, I get chills just telling you this. Because he came out and was wearing this yellow buffalo suit that he wore on the air.
Yeah, yeah.
And first of all, in color, you know, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah. I was with him an hour ago having dinner. Not the same guy.
Yeah.
You know, like Clark Kent and Superman. And he comes out and there's Buffalo Bob. I mean, and it was insane. And it was him at the piano and everybody's stoned in the audience and they're singing the songs. They know the songs. They're asking questions. It was an amazing night. It was an amazing night, magical night.
And you generalized out his interest in television by befriending other local television
I knew them all. Everybody that was on television in my area, Officer Joe Bolton who hosted the Three Stooges on Channel 11, Bill Britton who played Bozo. Why would I even remember these names? I knew them all. I wrote to them. I got to know them, and I went down there as a little kid. So,
did your parent family have to take you down there?
My mother would take me. Yeah, my mother would take me down there. So as the years went by, I stayed friendly with these people. So I knew
them. Was there a Hobo Kelly back east?
No, that would be your local whoever.
No, Hobo Kelly.
Hobo
Kelly and Sheriff John.
Think about that. Right. There's no way a show called Hobo Kelly would get made nowadays.
But no.
She was a homeless hobo.
It was a woman?
Yeah.
Oh, hobo.
Yeah.
Hobo Kelly might have
Sheriff John? Was Sheriff John?
No, but it would seem to me that Sheriff John or Hobo Kelly might have a podcast, but would not get on television.
Yeah.
But anyway, I ended up on the road. The magic of
television and media, that era, like sports, when you're talking about him owning the liquor store, I grew up with sports people, golfers, and they had off-season jobs. Football players had jobs. Jim Otto, the center for the Minnesota Vikings, who was an all-star, all-pro, he worked at a tire place in Palm Desert during the winter.
Wow.
Because television and sports weren't a career. They were something that, you know, you had a passion for.
People got interested in.
Well, I found out later that the reason he bought the he bought the liquor store probably for a couple. Jew's laughing. He knows for a couple of reasons. Yeah,
cover,
I think he enjoyed. Yeah, he enjoyed having a drink or two at night.
Who didn't in that 19 late 50s, early 60s?
And the other thing is, he knew that Howdy was finally going off the air after 13 years, and was looking for a place for the guys that he worked for him to be and run and all that. So he was doing it for a couple of reasons, and that was the reason for the liquor store.
Better than having a bar.
Yeah, that's right.
Bars. That's, yeah. My dad's accountant one time told him, because he spent so much money at this bar, we should just buy the bar, and then you'll at least make money off of it. He bought the bar and it almost bankrupted. It's called the Ski Room in Inglewood. And he bought, and he just gave away the drinks for free because he'd get drunk and then everybody could drink for free.
Oh, that's funny. I want to tell you another story. Drew reminded me. While I was writing to Bob, there was a show on Channel 11 in New York called Officer Joe Bolton and the Three Stooges. It was like Sheriff John, like you were talking about. And I would write to this guy
Bill.
Every week. Yeah. Every week, could you please send me a picture of yourself and the Three Stooges? And I would get for like, I don't know how many weeks in a row, I got a postcard with Officer Joe's head and the Three Stooges' head, and it said, to Bert, best wishes, Officer Joe Bolton. And then I would write him back, could I please have a picture of your whole bodies, not just your head? And I would continue to get the same thing back. One day, And we lived in an apartment then. One day, the doorbell rang, and I opened the door. There's nothing there. I looked down, and there's a big 8.5 by 11 envelope there. And it's with the WPIX logo. And I open it up, and there's a letter. Dear Bert, enclosed are the only pictures that I have of myself and the Stooges of our whole bodies. Please enjoy them. You sound like a very persistent young man. Here's my phone number, and it says two. There was no area code. MU26500
Murray.
Please, right? That's
Murray
right.
Murray 2.
Murray Hill 26500. Please call me. I'd like to meet you. Well, I run into my mother, and I said, "We got to call. This is a weekend. She said, you can't call him now. It's Saturday." So Monday we called him, and he got right on the phone with me, and invited me down. And said, I have tickets for you for the Bozo show, so you can see that while you're here. We go down, whatever it was, 2 weeks later. There's a payoff to the story. We go down 2 weeks later, and I'm in line with every other kid. And a lady comes out and makes an announcement. Excuse me, is Bert Dubrow online here? And I raise my hand. Brings me back in the offices. I meet Joe Bolton. I meet Bill Britton, who was Bozo.
Yeah.
And that began this amazing relationship between myself and this guy, Joe Bolton. Just the nicest man that I think I had ever known in that part of the industry. We stayed friendly for years and years and years and years. Now, go to the 80s, pre-Sally. I'm in Cincinnati.
Bert ends up producing Sally Jesse.
So this is pre-Sally. I'm at a show called The Bob Braun Show for this company, Multimedia, and this woman came in, Joan Maurer, who was Mo from the Three Stooges' daughter. Mm. And she's doing a demo segment of all the Three Stooges merchandise. So I can't wait for it to end. And I go over to her and I introduce myself. I'm Bert. I'm the executive producer of the show. And I don't know if you know where this man is, but I lost touch with him. His name was Joe Bolton. She goes, oh my gosh, it was my father's favorite. I know where he is. I said, look, I'm not going to ask you for the number, but if you could just take my name, I would love to reconnect with him. About 2 weeks later, she calls me up. She says, Bert, he remembers you. He wants you to call him. Because many years had gone by. Yeah. So he was living out here. I was in Cincinnati at the time. I pick up the phone. I call. I get him on the phone. We start talking. And it became very emotional. I always knew, Bert, you were going to do this and blah, 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 blah. And right before we hang up, he says to me, could you do me a favor? I said, I'll do anything for you. You did so much for me. I will do anything. He said, could you please send me a picture, but of your whole body, not just your face.
Wow.
And
how about that
was the last time I talked to him. Yeah.
That's the world I want to live in.
We have to take a quick break, but I find it so fascinating that these little local TV shows thought of themselves as little local businesses. There was no sense of mass media. Radio was mass media. These were little local fledgling businesses.
That's right.
Had to write letters to the – there was their customers right there in the local little network.
That's true.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Be right back. Well, of course, you've heard me talk about Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right. This is in the Calabria region of Italy. They use it like crazy. They've used it for generations. It's something that's extremely rich in polyphenols. Now, I don't typically get behind supplements, but this is one I can sign off on. It is known to reduce the risk for heart disease. The Italian government has actually done some very good research on bergamot, as well as many studies to prove its effectiveness. Bergamot Mega Plus is a natural statin, right? That's an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. That's much like the medicines that people take, I myself take. Lowers triglycerides, raises HDL, lowers LDL. Some people take bergamot with the statin even. So it addresses also conditions faced by millions of people worldwide. That is the so-called metabolic syndrome, which is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. And it helps with that. It helps with insulin resistance. Now, I do suggest that you, of course, talk to your doctor if there's any question at all. And there are alternatives pharmaceutically that many doctors may recommend. But Bergamot Mega Plus offers an all-natural option. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many good quality scientific studies. So to learn more, visit bergamot.com. That's B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. That is bergamot.com. Or click on the Bergamot banner on our website. I suggest you do so. And we are back. Bert Dubrow is our special guest.
Bergamot.
Bergamot, of course. Yeah, that stuff is. Listen, I don't know what to say. It's hard for me to get past.
I'm hoping to get what you've got so I can take it.
I don't think it would be a bad idea for you to take it. I mean, you know, as a man your age,
I'm just saying. Oh, you hear that?
I'm just saying this is it's good for vascular health, and you know you know.
I just love that Drew's
do your own research. You'll see
these alternative ideas.
This
now.
Is not. This is well. This is good science.
That's I don't know what you're it. Talking about, either of you. But Bob, I would listen to Drew if I were you.
Yeah. Bird, so anyway, so Bird ends up working in television forever. Ends up give the quick pedigree. Do you know this? Do you know this?
I knew Sally Jesse Raphael. I didn't know.
Okay, so the chick with the red glasses. Those of you that
and
are...
and what else? The Jerry thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the same time.
Well, here's how
both of them at the same time.
Here's how it happened. Okay, with Sally. I was with the company that was with did the Phil Donahue show, so I was there.
Oh, we used to produce for Michael Douglas, all the way back then.
Mike Douglas, yeah,
Mike
yeah.
Douglas.
Oh, but, Mike Douglas, yeah, yeah. I love Mike Douglas.
But I'm doing.
Were you there when John Lennon was on for a week?
I was not. I got there a week later.
Oh
got
my
there,
God,
John and Yoko. I got there a week later. But anyway, so I'm doing this show, a regionally syndicated show for the company that did Phil Donahue. And one day it occurred to me that. What happens if Phil, it's really what went through my head. What happens if Phil gets hit by a bus? This company's out of business. So I wonder if they have any other plans. So I knew the CEO.
That's a good thought.
Right.
That's a makes practical sense. Thing.
So I went to him and told him the same thing, and he was a little offended.
Keeps asking
by that.
The same thing about me.
A little offended. But and he said to me, you know, we don't really think about that. I said, well, if I come up with something, will you guys at least address it? Yeah. I said, yes. So I went back.
Bert invented MTV too, asking that story. That's another story.
About a week later, and I said, I was thinking about this. How about a woman? And I will never forget. He looked at me and said, a woman? Why a woman? I said,
Phil Donahue said that?
No, this guy, Walter Bartlett, said that.
Oh, okay.
And I said, why a woman? I said, well, mainly because a woman, there is no woman. So that's why I thought a woman. And the example I gave him then, and I sort of still live by this, I guess. I said, if Phil Donahue, because he was the only one out there doing it, is doing a show for women, and on that particular show, let's assume it's about their menstrual cycle. He's going to connect one way on it. I got to believe if a woman is hosting, it'd be a whole different connection. And he looked at me like I was completely out of my mind. But to get me out of there, he said, listen, if you can find someone. So I won't bore you with how I found her, but I found Sally. And
what was she doing before?
Radio. She was doing radio. On NBC Radio. And a TalkNet was the name of the network. TalkNet Radio. I brought her in to audition. I put together a demo tape. And the next thing I knew, we were going to do this show. And I thought all would be great. And he looked at me and Walter Bartlett said, here's the thing. We're going to do this, but you got to go to St. Louis. I said, St. Louis? Why St. Louis? Because I was in Cincinnati. He said, because we own a station in St. Louis, KSDK. But it was an hour difference. So I traveled back and forth doing the Sally show in the beginning, just getting it started to try to figure out what it was going to be and all that back and forth. So I would do 2-3 days in St. Louis, 2 days in Ohio, and did that. And then
Phil Donahue, I thought he was in Chicago.
Phil was in Chicago, but The company wasn't in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
So hold it. So I put this demo reel together with Sally. And they give it to some of the stations, and they call me up, and they bring me in the office. They said, look, good job, but these general managers that are watching this don't like those glasses she's wearing. And as God is my witness and as I'm sitting here, I looked at him in the face, and I said, listen, if we ever get lucky enough to become anything, and odds are we won't, but if we do, those glasses will be a trademark.
The red glasses.
Yeah, the red glasses. They said, thought I was crazy. You got to look, get other glasses. So I said, okay. So Sally was in New York at the time. I called her husband. I said, Carl, do me a favor. Go out and get 5 of the ugliest pair of glasses you can think of. He said, why? I said, just get them and bring them to St. Louis. I'll explain. So we meet in St. Louis. No audio or anything. I just put her in front of the camera. I still have this tape, actually. Put her in front of the camera, just a medium close-up, and we put these glasses on her. 1, 2, 3, and the last pair we put on her was the red glasses, which of course looked better than the ugly ones. And so I took this little 3/4-inch tape under my arm, went back to Cincinnati. I said, look, I did what you guys asked, and I was right there when they put it on. They put it in, and these geniuses look at this tape, and they looked at me right in the face afterwards, just said, you know what, Bert? you're right, the red ones really are better. And we ended up staying with the red glasses. And that's true story.
And I would say with all the different environments he's worked in, still nothing like CNN HLN.
No.
Yeah.
That was still, for both of us, was like a stunning, like, wow, this is a different place.
But the best,
not in a bad way necessarily, but just different.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't it, let's be honest, weren't they trying to sell HLN the whole time you were there?
No.
That's what I heard.
Oh, no. I talked to Jeff Zucker. He did a town hall horror movies, town hall meeting where he said, listen, let me be clear with all of you. This is a fully executed cable network. It is priceless, and it is not for sale under any circumstances. That's the president of CNN.
So they just rebranded it into a travel agency.
What?
And that's what they're doing.
HLN?
Yeah, and CNN. The Bourdain thing is a travel log. As soon as the election is over, the whole network will just be travel.
I never looked at it like that.
It's true.
There's one travel show, and it's really a culture show. It's a food show.
It's because it's election. No, it's all, I know.
What are you talking about? The he's just consulting for them right now.
So are they doing, they want more Bourdain, right?
I'm thinking a book and a trip now through CNN.
But Bob, it's, you know, they have a morning show, Good Day. You know, what's it called?
New Day.
Kayla's now on HLN.
We're gone from there 10 minutes. We don't remember any of the show.
And then they have, like, you know, they have shows, all news shows all the way through the day.
Yeah, all based around the election. It's been a year and a half.
No, around CNN, the shows. Not HLN. On CNN, you're right.
CNN but not is going to have their own films. They're going to be like, try to be a network.
At nighttime, late night, like after 10 o'clock. But the rest of the day is all news.
And what's going to be on HLN where your show was?
Well, you're consulting.
We don't know.
Well, Ashley's there now, Ashley Banfield.
Ashley's on at 8 o'clock, not 9 o'clock, and not 7 o'clock. Right now, they're running Forensic Files. Now, if you would have said the show's going to turn, the network's going to turn into Forensic Files, I think Drew and I would probably look and go, that makes sense.
Well, it doesn't really matter what it turns into. It's not a news network other than the election, right?
It's a travel agency.
We were there for almost 6 years. It was
I'm
news.
I'm talking about now.
It
not
was
5 years
it,
ago.
It caught a wind with the election. When the election's
can
over,
can I break this up for you?
Yeah, yeah.
Here's what's going to happen. What's going to happen is it will go back to a normal CNN when the election is over. And at night they have created these shows like Anthony Bourdain and Lisa Ling and all those other things. And those things do very well. And they call them news now. But those are just for prime time and specials and all. It'll still be Anthony Cooper just signed a new contract. You got Jake Tapper and all those other people. And
what are they going to talk about? They've just been talking
for
a year.
That's
and
always
a half.
The problem. That's always unless a plane gets lost or you've got an election. That's always the problem of these networks.
Right.
Yeah,
they have to fill the day with news that attracts eyes.
I just heard that it's going to be more like network.
No.
Because
HLN might have some of that.
It may turn into a phone company now, but that's a whole other thing.
AT&T
just bought the whole thing.
Well, if the deal go through, it'll take a year.
That's right.
But it's hard to know how that's going to affect things. I bet they'll leave Time Warner alone for a while.
What happened
when Comcast took over Universal? They left it alone.
Yeah, they left it alone.
But they consolidated buildings and things, and they invested in. They put capital in.
Well, they ended up with all those other networks too. They ended up with Bravo and this and the life.
So Wahlberg is doing Sally Jesse. This guy named Jerry Springer.
I'll tell you that here. So
I like his bodyguard.
Steve Wilkos. I hired Steve Wilkos. Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah. But listen, so I'm doing Sally, and while I was doing Sally in the beginning, they gave me a consultant. His name was Dick Mincer. And Dick Mincer was the original executive producer of Donahue. A terrific guy. But I watched Dick in my own eyes and saw Phil Donahue. Nothing else. And that was all he did. And I thought, I don't know that I want to do that. Nothing against Dick. I'd like to expand. Dick, that was what Dick did. But I wanted to expand and do something else. But it sort of made me nervous just to see someone like that doing one thing. So I was always on the lookout for something. Now, while I was in Cincinnati, as I told you earlier, a guy named Jerry Springer, who used to be the mayor, came on just to do commentaries on the news. He was only on at the end doing commentaries. And they would bring him on the show that I was doing. And he was funny as hell. And we got to know each other really well. Well, I got roped into a little bit of Sally Jesse Raphael, started that whole thing. So that took me a while. About 5 years into Sally, we were doing pretty well, or more than 5 years. And they came to me and said, we're going to renew your contract. And I said, you know what? leave it alone. Let's not renew it so quickly. I'd like to do something else. They said, what? I said, I want to do another show. And they said, well, do you have anybody in mind? I said, yes. Who? Jerry Springer. Well, at this point, Jerry's now the anchor for WLW in Cincinnati, which this company owns. Well, if you know anything about local television, that's the most important thing is the news. The last thing in the world they want to do is have their guy do a talk show. But I said to them, let me do this, or let me at least try it. So
he has a tape of him teaching Jerry how to do talk.
Yeah.
How to interview people.
Right. So they went back, and first of all, they said to me, don't say anything to Jerry. Now, I'm in New York doing Sally at this point. Walter goes back on a plane to Cincinnati, Ohio, tells me not to say anything. And then it occurred to me, I went to sleep that night, I thought, wait a minute, he's going to go tell Jerry.
Yeah.
So I call Jerry. I said, hey, by the way, he says, you're too late. He says, I know it was you. Don't worry about it. But Walter came to me. I said, we got to do this. He said, I told Walter, I want to do this. So there I found myself back in Ohio. We started the Springer Show in Ohio as sort of a Donahue-ish kind of a show. That's how it began. And it did not very well, but it was okay. And then one day out of nowhere.
But by the way, as you told the story to me, you were sort of desperate, for like trying to reinvent the thing. What are we going to do? This thing isn't working. We got to come up with new ideas for this.
Yes, but in the middle of that, the NBC owned and operated stations, for whatever reason to this day I don't know, came to us and said, we want to buy the show for all of our stations under one condition. You move the show from Cincinnati to Chicago and use our studios at WMAQ, I guess it was. And so there we were, doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And one day, out of almost nowhere, I was the only guy, I didn't know this, doing two of these shows at the same time, okay? So I'm doing Sally, and I'm doing Jerry, right? And what's the show? I can't think of it now, but I'll think of it. It's on CBS. Called up and wanted to do a piece on me because I was the only one doing this.
It was like a news, 2020 piece.
It was like a 2020 show. It's still on, but I forget the name of it.
Dateline.
Like 60 Minutes.
Yeah, it was like that, but it was on CBS, still on CBS. Anyway, so they come to my house, blah, blah, blah. They come to Sally. They mic me. They watch me do the show. Everything's fine. I know what's going on. No problem. Same thing about 2 weeks later, Springer. They follow me to Chicago. They put a mic on me in the studio. And everything's fine until all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we're doing a show on race. This guy gets up and punches this black guy right in the face on the air. Boom, like that. And me, not thinking, I run behind the set and I go, yes, this is going to be great. We're going to be on the news.
No.
And I look up and there's that damn CBS camera in my face. And I thought, So we went to a break. We had to calm the audience down. And I went to the producer of this show and I said, listen, is there any way that I could get you not to run that little thing whenever you put this together of me going that? And he looked at, you know, going, great, great, great. He looked at me. So let me ask you a question. If it were you, would you run it?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yep, I would. And so anyway, I had no choice.
They held
it for ratings. And that night, Lynn, my wife and I, went upstairs. It's on 10 o'clock at night. And so we went upstairs at 9 o'clock, figured we'll get into bed and get ready and watch this thing at 10 o'clock and see how it turns out. Well, at 9 o'clock, every promo between 9 and 10 is that fight and me going, yes, yes, we're going to be. Now, I had already told the company, so we're okay. Anyway, when that happened, that sort of began the whole idea of fighting. Yeah. So it was really, it was an accident.
Then somebody threw a chair.
Everything was thrown.
And that's when it really
crystallized. Yeah, and then this guy, Richard Dominic, who was a producer then, I had made him the executive producer of the show. We changed the whole thing, and he took it to a completely different level, and it became, I mean, there's a lot
so
in between.
After 50 years of television, 40, how many years of television? When did you start?
I don't think about it.
So what do you think now? What's the evolution of television? The reason I'm making the comment about...
Bert and I spent many, many, many hours talking about this. Hard to figure out.
But even at that era, there wasn't a million Jerry Springers broke out because of Jerry Springer. Now, my thing is, once there's Anthony Bourdain, there'll be 10 of them. Once there's Lisa Ling or whatever, there'll be 10 of them. And once there's a Murder Channel, there'll be murders till the end of time.
Well,
right? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, but not necessarily on the same network. So in other words, you'll see another Anthony Bourdain on a Travel Channel or here or there, and it will never be what Anthony Bourdain was. Us doing Sally or Geraldo doing Geraldo or Jenny Jones doing Jenny Jones was never to me as good as Phil. I mean, Phil and Johnny Carr and David Letterman would sit and tell you that, and he had a great line when Johnny Carson died. It was an amazing line. He did a little tribute, which plays into what you're saying. He idolized Johnny, and he sat back at his desk after Carson died, and he looked up and he said, "You know, all of us guys that are sitting behind the desk, we're all trying to do Carson, but let's face it, none of us are really pulling it off."
I heard Damon Wayne say the same thing with Richard Pryor.
He said,
"Look, we're all doing Pryor. We're all doing Richard. And you're either lying. Wait, it's true. You're either lying or not funny."
but I like to direct to consumer. If Damon Wayans can't draw people, he'll stop doing a bad imitation of Richard Pryor. With television, they just decide we're going to be this. We're going to be a murder channel. And then ID channel just becomes murder.
You understand
murder,
that the people
murder.
That make the programming decisions are risk aversive.
But think of this for a minute, and this sort of says everything. You could stop people on the street today and ask them what TLC stands for, and they won't know. It actually started as the Learning Channel.
Yeah.
Now it's got little people.
How about A&E?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
A&E was opera and ballet.
But, yeah, okay. But that's
how about the CMT, which is Spike, I think, now, isn't it?
No, that CMT is Country Music Television.
Well, I think Spike was something.
But,
like
that's right. It originally was Country, then it went into Spike.
But
you're right.
CNN, I loved when it first, say in the 90s, because what it gave you was a daily 24-hour news, in-depth news stories. That's not what they do anymore. It's just a million of the same story over and over again.
It's like the talk show world, though. If you think about it, Springer, when we started Springer, and I explained to you by accident, it wasn't something that we designed, and then everybody else followed suit.
How did our show evolve?
It's the same thing.
Ask him what he thought about me when he first had to deal with me.
Huh? What
did you think we had to deal with me? You're like, oh, crap, what are we going to do here?
I thought what everybody thought. We can do what Dr. Drew, in quotes, does. And that would be, rehab stuff and blah, 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 all that sort of health. And we tried it, and
nobody wants to watch it.
Would watch it. So it's the same thing with those networks. TLC tried to be the Learning Channel.
So tell them how we evolved. So we evolved.
Well, how did we evolve? You remind me.
Well, I think...
Out Susan. With a couple of Playboy bunnies on the show, and I was really pissed off. I remember that at the beginning.
what was the topic?
I don't remember, but I was like, why?
Yeah. Well, I remember
that wasn't the evolution.
I remember Susan and you coming in and saying Susan would say why and all that. And listen, I always say this to people. This is not what I want to do. I mean, if we did what I wanted to do, Howdy Doody is in my living room.
Well, I love the Behavior Bureau.
Okay, well, that was way later.
But it started out differently.
Let's get back to television. Wait, quickly, here's what happened. What happened was Casey Anthony. And we were starting to evolve into something a little different. And Burke goes, they called me, we got to do Casey Anthony. I'm like, oh, come on. Really? Casey Anthony? And kaboom.
Hold on. Let's set the stage or picture for everybody. Casey Anthony comes on, and we are completely against news and completely against Atlanta. And in fairness, the company doesn't want us to do that.
Yeah.
They want us to do, whatever this true show is. And Casey Anthony starts this trial, and we're looking at the numbers, and it's just exploding. And they said we should do it, and Drew and I are sitting in my office. He doesn't want to do it. I don't really want to do it. But I'm looking at the numbers every day. He's not looking at them as closely. And we sat in my office one day, and I said, Drew, look at this. The numbers are like tripling. We got to do it. He said, all right, what the heck? We'll do it. And so we did it, and we looked at the ratings the next day, and literally our numbers overnight doubled.
I didn't know that. I came in that day, and he looked at me. And I go, well, what happened? He goes, it's just stupid. It's just stupid.
I did say that. I said it was completely insane. And so, but here's the good news. The good news is we did it, and we found a way to do it Drew's way.
Yeah.
With behavior and all that.
And then Jody Arias is really where the Behavior Bureau happened. It's the same, but we grabbed that one. We're like, okay, we'll try to do this.
Drew's idea was to put a couple of shrinks on and then we sort of expanded it and turned it into it. And Drew really, for the most part, left us alone. Unless it came to the experts and the doctors. And he became, it was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Yeah. He became somebody else when it came to that. You know, you got to come to me. I got to know who these people are, blah, 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 blah. And he was right, because we didn't know who these people are.
Yeah. Oh, they were putting nudniks on.
Yeah.
And then there was something interesting about me with female professionals. It was just visually interesting. Oh, and we just went, oh, my God, that's interesting.
It became, let me tell you something. It became so funny that executives of ours would pick up the phone and call me in the middle of the show, because I had a thing. You could not be on the show unless you were, I'm talking women now, unless you were smart and good looking. Now, if you were just smart, you couldn't be on. And if you were just good, good looking, you couldn't be on. You had to be both.
That was really our criteria.
Yeah, it was. Now, it was.
Telegenic. You had to look right on TV.
He's saying telegenic. I'm talking English. All right, that's what happened. And we had one of our executives, who shall remain nameless, would pick up the phone and call me in the middle of the show and say, are you guys intentionally just putting redheads on tonight? I mean, he got off. Then finally,
But visually, that's interesting. Yeah.
Drew did a radio show. This was sort of a turning point for me. I'm sure not for everybody else. Drew did a radio show, and he's on this radio show. He called me right afterwards and then sent me a piece of it. And this radio guy, whoever it was, said, what are you guys doing over there? It looks like Charlie's Angels. And I said, this is great. People are seeing it. In other words, they're getting what we're doing. And it began to take off. It really began to take off. So I would say for a good two years.
The network had a problem. The network changed its sort of whole structure and what it was focused
on. That's what I'm saying.
We lost
that risk aversion. Here's the thing.
That was very risky.
The bigger point,
point
I'm trying to make is millennials don't watch television.
No. Yeah. No.
What happens 20 years from now?
This is
they
your CNN.
Don't listen to CNN.
No.
At all.
This is your CNN. It's in my hand. It's this instrument.
But you're right.
This is their version of it.
So what do you think? Where is television headed? Chasing its own tail, or is it going to reinvent itself?
I
believe it'll reinvent itself.
Me too. I will always believe.
But it has to take risks.
Yes. Well, we hear that all the time. Yeah. Take a risk. And usually when you take a risk, it's bad.
Yeah.
they took
a risk and tried to make themselves into a social media network. It didn't work.
It was a bad risk. So I believe that good talent, if it's good and really good and works within the contemporary times, it will find a place. It will find a place on television. Look, they put Stephen Colbert on. Les Moonves, who's going to be one of the smartest executives in the world. I mean, he's smart.
And Colbert, one of the greatest talents in the world.
Yeah, and guess what? Didn't work. Doesn't work. And they put this other guy on, James Corden, on at 12:30 at night, and he's becoming something, and Colbert isn't. That's just the way it goes. And so, and I believe this, that Drew and I will end up somewhere doing
something. We don't know what.
Well, doing what. Yeah. I'm hoping we end up somewhere interpreting the news, whatever that means, for an audience that doesn't want to watch it.
But what was hard is, because I would watch it, and Drew, you're touching on something, which is the audience itself that's interested in these sexy girls who murdered their children or their boyfriends. Mm-hmm. And you were putting it back in their face a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
And they didn't know it.
No, I know. That was absolutely.
Did you know that? Because really,
I wouldn't discuss that with him.
What's interesting is why
I would discuss
is
that
it,
with the psychologist and things.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
A lot of women murder their children. Not all of them look like Casey Anthony.
Right.
It was the obsession of a certain part of the population that wanted to watch about this woman who murdered her kid. Yeah. And the thing that I always found great about it was Drew was really talking about their obsession with it.
Oh, absolutely.
While they thought he was talking about somebody else.
That's right. No, yes, I did know that. And by the way,
I say the same thing now about a lot of stuff. I'd be like, Donald Trump, we did a whole thing on what's up with people who support Donald Trump. I want to understand them. I want to understand what you see in this guy. What is it about you? We filled our studio with Trump supporters, and we poked at him. And we
did stuff nobody did. And by the way, that doesn't make it great. We just did. We did an audience of Trump supporters. We did an audience of Muslims. We did an audience of transgenders. I mean, these were really, really good shows that, guess what? Not a lot of people watched. Now, I would argue that if we put that on a network that was bigger, that we would have gotten a much bigger audience. But we certainly walked out of there, corny as it sounds, feeling pretty good.
Yeah, we did good stuff over the years. And really, talk about evolving. We evolved and changed and maneuvered. And they gave us the support and room to do that, too.
Absolutely.
By the way,
yes,
you know
that's the other extraordinary thing about working there. There was time to do that and support.
But
to do
so, just so we're clear, CNN did in-depth stories, sometimes 12-minute stories about politics, about the Clinton administration, about something. Then HLN was the headline news. Every 10 minutes, you would get all the
22 minutes.
Every 22 minutes, right. So now CNN has just become headline news. It says the same headline every 20 minutes, right?
Again,
and HLN's looking for an identity. What was the ID channel's original content?
Before murder
what
porn?
What does ID stand for?
Discovery
investigative
ID.
Discovery.
Investigative discovery. Right. Yeah, yeah. So it was a discovery network like National Geographic.
Here's what I believe Jeff Zucker, his philosophy is at CNN. Take three hot stories and bang them to death. Do them. And it works for them.
Yeah.
I mean, he got
While there's an election. It's over in 16 days.
Forget the election. Look at the lost air. Look at the plane that was lost. When the airplane
was 6 weeks.
Oh, hopefully a plane will get lost.
No. He took that story and he did a
No, he was criticized for it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He was really criticized for it, yeah.
Yeah, but I just find it fascinating that you got 500 channels of television, and Trump's going to have one too now. That's exciting. Trump TV. You heard about that?
You want to be on it?
Huh? I want to be on it.
See that?
Trump TV.
Why is that exciting, by the way?
Because he's just going to just be Trump 24 hours a day. All right. He's got the highest ratings in television.
Okay, all right. That's a good point. Yeah.
It's true.
I don't know what to say about that.
Take a break so Bert can regroup.
No. We're not taking a break. Do we need another break? No, we're still going.
Okay.
Yeah. You guys talk. I'll regroup anyway.
What? Do you need a moment?
Well, I'm taking a moment.
I think Trump 24 hours a day till we die.
It's working for CNN.
Yeah. So I think Bert, people would be interested in listening to your stories. One of the things they'd be interested in the Andy Kaufman stuff.
Dear Andy. When I was at school in Boston.
And try to focus on, is he crazy? Does he know what he's doing?
Well, of course.
All the stuff people
of course. I was on their school station every Thursday night and did a Tonight Show kind of show for the colleges that was in around the Boston area. And so I needed guests, and one day I get a knock on the door, and it's Andy, who nobody knows who he is at that point.
He's at your school.
Yeah, at school. And we were at school together. And he said, I do X, Y, and Z. I do Elvis, everything we know. I do a character called Foreign Man, which turned into Latka on Taxi. Mm-hmm. Can I come on? I said, absolutely.
He was doing comedy clubs in Boston
No. He was just Andy. He was just in school. Wasn't doing anything. And so I said, well, what do you want to do first? He started telling me the story about meeting Elvis. So I said, well, why don't we do that? You'll come on and tell the story, and we'll go from there. He said, all right. So he came on, and as just Andy.
Is this tape around anywhere? Is it available?
No. They were all erased.
All the way through your group.
But sweet, wonderful, lovely guy, Andy. And he starts telling this story, and as I'm sitting there, listening to it, I realized he's telling this a lot longer than he told me in my dorm room. And it's going on. It's getting funny. The audience is laughing. And I realize we're out of time. We're done. So I said to him, listen, what if you come back next Thursday and finish the story? So he said, one better. I'll finish the story and maybe I'll do Elvis. And at that point, not a lot of people were doing Elvis. It wasn't a big thing then. And he did. He came back on and he did Elvis like nobody did Elvis. I mean, he was and at that point, he wasn't lip syncing. He was doing it. He actually did it. Eventually, he lip synced.
I think you said the Mighty Mouse thing is to happen.
Well, I had a record.
It was his first record.
From all the kid shows that I loved. And it was, I forget, but all children's theme songs. Rin Tin Tin was on there. Howdy Doody was on there. Wagon Train was on. I'm thinking of the cover of the album. Wagon Train was on there. And the Mighty Mouse theme was on there. And Andy and I were listening to it one day, and he went crazy when he heard Mighty Mouse.
We have to cut in the Mighty Mouse theme.
Here I come to save the day.
Yeah, that's right. Here I come.
So I gave him the record, and he ended up using it. And he did it, if you remember at all. He had a little record player by him.
Old-fashioned record
the needle,
player.
And he put it on. So Andy, all this stuff.
He would sit, for people that didn't see, it was an SNL skit where it became famous. He would sit and tap his music to the music and wait until the Here I Come to Save the Day. And he would go into this very animated Here I Come to Save the Day movement.
We became best friends. And so as when we left school, Andy went in, like you said, to stand-up comedy, and I would take him at 2 o'clock in the morning to the Improv, Catch a Rising Star in New York, because he'd get on at maybe 2 o'clock in the morning for maybe 5 minutes. And he brought all these props with him. One prop he would bring every time was a sleeping bag. And I remember saying to him one day, what the hell? Why do you keep bringing this damn? Because we'd have to load the stuff out of the car. And he said, I'll never forget it. He said to me, well, if I really die one night, like if I'm on there and I'm really dead, I'm just going to open up that sleeping bag and go to sleep. It hadn't happened, but that was it hadn't happened at that point. But that was why he did it. And so anyway, this goes. So we became very, very, very close. A couple of quick things. I got a job at the Mike Douglas Show, and we were doing a bit. We would always do these bits, and Robert Goulet, the singer, would come on. I didn't know this until I got there. Every time he came on, they would play a joke on him, and so now I had the segment. So they said, well, you got to play a joke on Robert Goulet. What kind of joke? Well, we did this, we did that. You got to come up with something. So I thought, all right. And I remember Jerry Lewis, I had seen years before that, do a thing where he was singing a song, like a serious song. And they would take a camera and shoot the camera guy as Jerry's doing the serious song. The camera guy's laughing. Oh. And Jerry's getting pissed. Oh. But it was a bit. And I thought, wait a minute. I could do that with the boom guy. And have a boom guy laughing at Robert Goulet singing the song. So I go in and I tell everybody, this it's great. I think I left out the Jerry Lewis part. I made like this was my idea. And so I called. They said, well, who's going to be the boom guy? I said, I got a guy. And I called Andy. No one knew who he was at this point. And I called him up and I said, Andy, here's the bit, blah, 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 blah. You think you could do it? He said, absolutely. So we flew him in and Robert Goulet singing with the Philadelphia Flyers wives around him. And he's sitting there singing this song, has no idea. And all of a sudden, Andy's, he's on the boom, starts to gradually laugh until the point where he's hanging off of the boom, hysterical. And Goulet has no idea. And it was wonderful. That was Andy's first appearance on TV. That I do have.
And he was not crazy.
No, Andy was not crazy.
He knew what he was doing.
He knew what he was doing.
The Jim Carrey thing left that open.
Well, it made Andy look crazier than Andy was, but Andy put so much thought.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Mary Lou Henner, who we had on Drew, found out that Andy and I were best friends and grabbed me. We had a little running gag, if you remember, Bob, where at the Drew Show we had a closet. It was the only place we could go talk to people was the closet.
We had no room.
Yeah. So Mary Lou said, Bert, I got to talk to that bit. I've always wanted to talk to you. So she brings me in there and she says, I got a theory about Andy. And I said, what's that? And she said, and maybe you could tell me if it's true. And I said, what's that shit? I think he was gay and he died of AIDS. And I said, Mary Lou, let me tell you something. If there's one person on the planet, and people didn't know this about Andy, that was not gay, and I was trying to be nice, it was Andy. But just the other day, yesterday, out of nowhere, I was on the internet, and there's a great piece, you should listen to it, of Mary Lou just talking about Andy. So Andy and I were best friends right to the very end. The whole Tony Clifton thing I was in the middle of. He came at almost every show.
Wrestling thing was all planned. None of that was.
All came out of 50. Here's what Andy was. Andy and I told you earlier, connected on Howdy Doody.
Howdy Doody 50s.
He was a lover of 50s television. Yeah. When he found out that I knew Buffalo Bob, oh my God, then that brought us together. Yeah. Wrestling became popular in the 50s on television.
Yeah, Gorgeous George.
That's exactly. That's why Andy started doing it. If you said to Andy, and if people remember, they may not, Andy used to wrestle girls, not guys. Yeah. And if you said to Andy, why do you wrestle girls? He'd say, I'm not going to wrestle a guy. I'll get killed. So he would just do girls. And everybody was planted in the audience, all planned.
Planted him, right?
Yes. Bob, who was his writer. Still does Tony Clifton now, Bob.
We have to wrap this thing up.
Awesome. See television.
Bert came in and what are we going to do? Bob's like, what are we doing here? What's that? We'll have something to say. I think I figured out the new show, Bert.
It's
you and me just talking. It's the new show.
There you go.
So, all right. Anything you want to say before we wrap this thing up?
The best thing that happened to me from everything that we talked about in this is that I got to meet this man. I got to meet Drew. And we became friends. And my only hope is that we're back together again doing something on television, which is what we're trying to do now. But that's
we're looking at other platforms and things.
So anyway.
So anybody that's in that business, please let's call. I'll send it right over to Bert. He'll figure out how to do it. We'll do it.
Maker.
What?
You know about Maker?
No.
No.
What's that?
It's that It's YouTube channel.
I'm just going to start screaming words at you, Bob.
YouTube channel.
Maker.
YouTube channels.
Yeah. All right.
If we've learned anything before we go,
yeah.
I think people should look forward to the new CNN, the travel. If we leave him with any, let's leave him with
there, is there an N word that's a travel rather than news?
See you later.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Remember days gone by.